better. Mora made a face. Kadria loves to say shit about magic and science, but this stuff always sounds like a physics lesson to me. Nathan remained silent. Despite how basic this sounded to Mora, it was confirming things that he had only suspected. Humanity lacked a lot of knowledge on how the world worked. It was difficult to systematically collect data and prove theorems on reality-bending rocks that doubled as national superweapons. Anyway, magic isn't everything living. Plants, animals, potatoes, your cock. She leered at him for a moment. But you also use it for magic. You guys use those funky spell frames with triangles and pentagons and shit. But it's all just a way to convert magic into something real.
I know this part, Nathan said. We need an equivalent amount of magic to create physical things and elements such as fire. The same goes for raw magical spells like barriers, the wireless, and controlling summons. The spell frames amplify magic, letting us use less magic.
Bzzzt. Wrong, Mora poked him. He stared at her. I mean, you're mostly right, but you're wrong enough that I bet it's fucking with your ability to use ascended magic, she explained. Look, magic is just energy. So is everything else. Fire? That's just heat and light. Is something moving? That's what we call kinetic energy. Your barriers are just huge walls of glowing kinetic energy. That's why they break. If you hit them with more force than they can repel, they shatter.
What do spell frames do? He asked, frustrated. If everything is one-to-one, aren't they pointless?
They let you draw in large amounts of ambient magic efficiently. That's why you can't use weaker spell frames for stronger spells. If you had enough magic in your body to blow up an army, then the world would burn down every time someone died. You jumpstart a spell using your magic, but rely on the magic of the world around you for the big stuff. That's why magical dead zones can exist. Mora grinned. Not so dumb now, am I?
Nathan scowled in response, but he had to admit that her explanation made sense. Very little was known about spell frames and how magic was used in general. Nathan wasn't much of a mage, but he knew that a lot of knowledge had come from Omria herself. If Mora knew this much, it suggested that the goddess had withheld a lot of information. But why? Because now that Nathan knew this, it changed the entire way he approached using magic. It explained why using ley lines made it so much easier and faster to cast spells, and why empowering spells with the binding stones was so effective. If there was a way to replicate this for other mages, the world could be changed overnight.
How does this apply to ascended magic? He asked, changing the subject.
Ascended magic alters the world itself and has its own rules. If you're distorting space or creating a pocket dimension, it's kind of hard to talk about kinetic energy and shit. But it does run on the same magic, which is why you can use spell frames for it. You don't need to, though, she said.
I tried not using them, but I find it a lot easier with them.
Suit yourself, Mora shrugged. Anyway, just think of ascended magic as super magic. You can technically do anything it does with the natural elements, but the magic requirements are way higher. I can wave my hand and remove stuff from existence. The amount of magic you'd need to permanently create a grain of sand with the natural elements is enough to vaporize a city.
Let's not do that, Nathan said.
Boring, she chirped, then smirked. Because it's time to talk about the mental stuff. Your body is full of magic, right? Well, so is your mind. It's a separate thing, which is why you can enter it with magic. Mental tethers are magical connections as well. They're basically mini ley lines, purpose-built to carry magic for you.
Was that why Nathan felt such an overwhelming presence in his mind whenever he went to dive into his binding stones? He had always wondered about that. More to the point, he asked, are mental defenses magical as well? I never used mental magic before.
Oh no, you did. You just didn't realize it. Whoever trained you Bastions did a great job teaching you just enough to do your jobs, but not enough to be too dangerous, she said. Your mind makes up everything you are. Your thoughts, desires, emotions, memories. Change those, and you change the person. That's why mental magic is so cool.
The wicked grin on Mora's face was a reminder not to trust her. Anyone who could say how important one's sense of self was, then say it was cool to be able to change it, was someone to be very wary around.
Bastions do a great job of harming their champions, Nathan said coldly. I'd say they know plenty to be dangerous.
Mora rolled her eyes.
That's just incompetence. The mind is super fragile. It's like...
She looked around for something, then huffed.
Imagine you have a really small balloon, okay? Now you take a really big jug and keep pouring water into it. What happens to the balloon?
It breaks?
Yep. And that's what you dumbass Bastions do to your champions when you fuck around in their heads too much. Mental magic is all about not frying your target because your dick was too big for the hole you put it in. I mean, there's also the passive stuff, but I don't know how to teach you that. For us succubi, we have a third eye that lets us see mental stuff. We see your emotions and surface thoughts as little glowing pop-ups next to your head.
That creeped Nathan out. Even with all of his mental wards, he had no way to stop something he fundamentally didn't understand. For now, he focused on the mental magic training being offered.
Can you teach me how to safely traverse minds? I don't want to control them or manipulate them. I just need to better understand them, he said.
I mean, the techniques aren't much different, Mora answered. You need ways to slip past mental defenses, to sever tethers, to forcibly calm minds, and to penetrate other mental magic. I think it's time for some hands-on training.
Hours later, he regretted accepting her offer. His brain hurt, for many reasons. The twins were a headache by themselves, but the actual practice physically harmed him. As he suspected, they had held back earlier. Mora's lessons left his mind feeling bruised. His thoughts felt sluggish. Nathan realized how dangerous the current situation was. At any moment, the twins could attack him. They had the ability to overwhelm his tired mind. Learning from them had been a mistake.
Holy shit. You are the most paranoid fucking dude I've ever met. I can't imagine what the wards around your mental core are like, Mora said.
Her sister had fallen asleep long ago out of boredom, as she wanted nothing to do with teaching.
No wonder your wards are so fucking strong. I bet you hear a strange sound while walking alone, and you immediately consider 50 things it could be, and how you'd respond to each of them.
Not really, he said, because the response to most things I'd encounter on a walk alone in my castle is probably a friendly wave. She ignored his jibe and leaned back in her chair. The sun had set in this strange world of theirs, and unfamiliar stars were drawn in chalk on the black sky.
Look, mental magic is driven by your emotional state. The same goes for all ascended magic, but this stuff, even more so, she explained. If you want to control others, you need to desire to control them. If you want them begging and panting, well, you need to be a slut.
At least she was self-aware.
All ascended magic? He asked, repeating her earlier point.
That's what I'm told, Mora shrugged. I'm not great at this stuff. Like, fucked if I know how opening a hole between dimensions has anything to do with your emotions or shit.
They fell silent for a while. Eventually, Nathan decided to simply ask Mora something.
Does the appearance of somebody's mental world tell you something about them?
Well, duh. Yours is like a fortress. Lots of layers and traps. And then you attack us if we slip through.
Mora pressed her hands together like a vice.
But you're also aware of mental magic, which means you're reshaping your mental world. Normal folks aren't usually that different. Even bastions and powerful mages tend to have pretty similar minds once you get past their exterior defenses.
Alarm bells went off in Nathan's mind. So, if two of my champions appeared to be able to deceive me when I was inside their heads, he began to ask.
Yeah, there's something up there, she grinned at him. I can help you with that, you know. Take a look myself. All you have to do is let me. A single tether to your mind. Not even as strong as Kadria's.
He gulped. I'll think about it.
You seriously meant it that time. Mora sighed. Fine. Whatever. You're cute. So I'll give you this for free. What's up with them?
One floods me with lewd thoughts when I'm inside her.
No wonder you're inside her, Mora winked. Next time, don't stick your dick in her while visiting her mind.
He ignored her jab and explained Fire's problem.
The other feels fake. I felt like her mind was a huge trap or a diorama. Even when I transferred control of her gems to me, something felt off. That's why I wanted better mental magic, so I could investigate if a succubus was behind her.
Huh. Yeah. That's weird.
Mora stared at a wall.
I'd say that's paranoia, but I wouldn't worry about the first one. That's a fairly basic mental defense. Child's play once you practice a little. Don't be like the little goat who never bothered to learn and just reads surface thoughts and emotions.
But you don't know about the second one, he finished.
What's she like as a person?
Difficult to read.
Nathan bit his lip, then decided to be honest. Mora was being surprisingly helpful, although her reason was clear, given she wanted him to make a deal with her.
She idolizes me, but is also a rabble-rouser and firebrand. Good with words, excellent fighter, dutiful.
Mora let out a whistle.
Sounds great. Also gives me no idea what could be up. People with issues have strange mental worlds. She could also be a user of mental magic.
That would be unheard of, he said.
True, but you've unsettled this world. Who knows what's going on? I've seen some really fun stuff over the years.
Mora stood up and walked over to her twin. He took this as the opportunity to leave and walked to the door.
Remember your promise, Nathan,
Mora called out, her sister in her arms.
Just a single tether, and we can do a lot. You won't regret it. And just think of the orgies.
She winked at him. As he left the strange world of the messengers, Nathan did his best not to think of the orgies. He could not say the same about his crotch. Over the coming weeks, he slowly practiced his mental magic, among other things. Nothing appeared to be awry with his new champion. Everything proceeded apace. One morning, Seraph opened his door. She wore her usual outfit, and the red and black dress hugged her curvaceous figure delightfully. Her smirk made it clear that his gaze was welcome, as his eyes drank in her figure and cleavage.
"Carriages from the spires have arrived at Castle Fosselburg," she told him. "Ambassador Serive wishes for you to meet him there, and then head to the spires to meet with the Council of Aurelia."
Chapter 17.
"Who's with him?" Nathan asked Seraph as they walked to the gateway in Garrick Pass.
"A pair of hunters. Your beloved Astra is nowhere to be seen."
Seraph smirked at him.
"I don't think I'd call her beloved."
"She certainly would."
No, she wouldn't. But he left that part unsaid.
They walked through the main hall of Garrick Pass, which bustled with activity. Guards patrolled the walkways. Clerks walked past with bundles of paperwork and stationery. Castle staff carried supplies from wagons. Noise drifted in from the open doors as the knights undertook their daily drills. Nathan's destination was the basement. Huge suits of armor stood beside a solid steel door. Runes glowed on the door, visually warning any intruders to stay away. Nathan supposed they also told intruders that this door was important, but they'd get a nasty surprise if they tried to break through. The suits of armor lit up with light as he and Seraph descended the staircase toward them. Unlike other areas of the castle, this one wasn't protected by knights. Only Nathan's champions had access to the basement. With a wave of his hand and a surge of magic, he unlocked the door and it opened. Once through, it slammed shut behind him and Seraph. A long, empty corridor greeted him. At the far end was an archway over solid stone. The gateway. A few doorways stood off to the side. One of those doorways contained the binding stone of Garrick Pass. Nathan didn't have a reason to check on it, so he ignored it.
"I take it Naughty May's talking with Cerive?" he asked.
"As much as she can. I'd describe her as strained when she spoke to me over the wireless," Seraph replied. "I've dealt with dark elves briefly. Cerive is the same as all the others. A massive asshole."
Nathan laughed. "I'm pretty sure they started training Cerive to look down on everyone that wasn't a dark elf from the moment he opened his eyes. Being realistic about the dark elves is only smart."
"He likes you," Seraph said.
"He thinks he can use me," Nathan corrected.
"Like I said, we need to be realistic. The council isn't inviting us to the spires for a friendly chat. They're inviting us because there is something in it for them. If we forget that, then someone will kick us off one of their massive towers and we'll plummet to our deaths."
"How optimistic of you."
"Somebody has to be," he replied.
They stood in front of the gateway. Despite appearing to be a featureless wall, magic radiated off it. Nathan felt it in his bones, without making any attempt to sense it. He touched the wall, and it shimmered like the surface of a pool of water. A circle of white light erupted from his hand, expanding to the edges of the archway over the wall. After a few seconds, a solid white door stood in front of him.
"After you," he said, gesturing to Seraph.
She pushed him through the gateway in response. Pure white filled his vision. He stumbled to a halt, reaching out to stabilize himself against the wall on the other side of the gateway. When his eyesight returned, he found himself in a small room inside the basement of Castle Forselberg. Seraph stepped through behind him, then continued walking. The binding stone of the castle sat in this chamber and glowed a dull white. Given he was here, Nathan brushed it with his hand and checked on it. Time itself slowed. Seraph's sachet ground to a halt. Nathan had an eternity to admire her ass if he wanted to, and she wouldn't even be able to tease him about it, as she was completely unaware. Time dilation was one of the more powerful abilities that a bastion had access to. When Nathan dove into the mental world of his binding stones, his awareness of the physical world accelerated a thousandfold. Even the blink of an eye became slow to him. Most of the time, he used it to give him more time to think and strategize. That was invaluable during battle, but he also needed that time to do anything with binding stones. Bending reality wasn't easy. The time dilation allowed Nathan to do fantastically complicated things. Nathan sank into his mind and the binding stone. In the back of his mind, he felt a gargantuan presence, almost alive, and powerful enough to consume him. But once he dove into it, it split up into a series of smaller entities. Four of these were larger than the others. These were mental nodes, and represented the binding stones he controlled. One each for Garrick Pass, Castle Forselberg, Fort Tobram, and Castle Tardis. Each had a fine mental tether connected to him and to each other. Many more tethers ran to small nodes and entities. Nathan had been connecting himself to the ley lines and cairns in his territory. Doing this enabled him to further enhance the range of his bastion abilities, which became less efficient the farther he was from a binding stone.
"God, that thing is ugly," Nathan said,
once again seeing something that didn't belong here. A fat, pulsing tendril of power was hooked into Garrick Pass's binding stone. It led out of his mental world. Once, he had mistaken it for a connection to Kadria. In reality, this tendril belonged to the twins. This was their parasitic connection to Garrick Pass, and through it, to his mind. What he couldn't see were thousands of little tethers connected to himself from Kadria. He knew they existed, but they remained invisible. Everything looked normal, so he returned to reality. Time sped back up. Seraph looked back at him.
"Why did you use binding stone magic?"
"Explain to me again how you can sense that," he asked.
"I told you before, I can sense your mental state," she said. "The hooks you place in champions run both ways, and I've gotten pretty good at reading the connection. Think of it like trying to make out sound by pressing your head against the ground and listening to vibrations."
"Does that really work?" he asked. "I thought that was a myth."
"The beastkin are pretty good at it. Doesn't Faye have a dog lieutenant that hunts like that?" Seraph said.
"Kara," he replied. "She's a champion candidate."
"I bet she's keen on that," Seraph winked.
But there was an odd look in her eyes. He grunted in response, then shifted the topic away from horny beastkin.
"So what, you can tell whenever I look at my binding stones?"
"Yes. You've been doing it a lot lately. It's been concerning me."
"No, I haven't." He tilted his head. "Wait, are you sure you're not just mixing it up with whenever I use mental magic?"
Seraph stared at him.
"Nathan, don't take this the wrong way, but hearing you say that you can use mental magic is terrifying, especially after your recent revelation that you're working with a messenger."
He winced. "Not like that."
"I'll take your word for it."
They walked out of the basement and toward Narime's office. Guards kept watch. The atmosphere was tense as they saluted Nathan. He returned the salute. No dark elves to be seen. Narime refused to do paperwork, so Seraph had a dedicated unit of clerks posted here. The door to their offices remained locked tight. While Nathan could go inside, there was no reason to. The fact the doors were shut said a lot about the current situation, though.
"I'm trying to expand my repertoire of magic," he explained to Seraph, as they ascended to the upper floors of the keep.
Nathan hadn't wasted energy on rebuilding Castle Forselberg, so it still retained its extremely tall, phallic shape.
"By becoming an incubus?" Seraph teased. "Do you plan to fight fire with fire when the twins attack again?"
"That's... He paused and stroked his chin. "I didn't think of that. It's a terrible plan, though."
"I imagine so, yes. They're literal sex demons, and you're still human, Nathan."
Her eyes flashed.
"Remember that while you're dabbling with ascended magic. Everything I know about the topic suggests that there's a price to pay."
"You certainly know a lot about ascended magic," he said, staring her down.
"After Kurai fell, I was taught many of the secrets that the Guardian Council knew, or that some of them knew, given Narime doesn't know some of this.
Seraph's expression darkened, and she looked out a window. Nathan stopped, realizing that Seraph was talking to him seriously about her past for once.
"We thought very little about the world outside our little bubble."
Seraph let out a ragged sigh.
"There aren't many people left who know how Kurai fell. It's a deep, dark secret. Hearing from you how cascades truly work, about the true power of messengers and the apocalyptic power they hold, it makes me realize just how pathetic my homeland was."
He remained silent. Narime always spoke about Kurai solemnly or wistfully. To the old fox, her homeland was a cherished memory that had been lost forever. Kurai's fall had been a tragedy to her. Seraph saw things differently.
"I don't want you to make those same mistakes, Nathan."
She faced him, before stepping up to him and pressing a hand against his cheek. Her eyes stared directly into his, as if trying to see into his mind.
"It's taken me my entire life to find a man who actually knows what they're doing. I'd hate to lose him because he repeated history."
Nathan held her hand with his, but his eyes hardened at her words. "Repeating history is the one thing I won't do." She smiled at him.
"Good. I'm looking forward to seeing that at the spires."
They broke apart, then rose the last flight of steps to Narime's office. A dark elf champion stood outside. Like all hunters, this champion swathed herself in robes from head to toe and covered her gems. Nathan didn't recognize her. He did find it curious that Sarif brought hunters this time instead of normal champions. To Nathan's knowledge, only the Bastions commanded the hunters. As a mere ambassador, he shouldn't be working with them on normal visits. His last visit with Astra had been special, given he had been collecting Tanius. A pair of beastkin knights played cards next to the hunter. The tension was thick enough that it seemed to cling to Nathan's skin. The knights saluted, and he returned it before heading inside the office. Sarif stood inside with another hunter. His skin was the color of ash, and his tailored silk suit matched his natural hue. Dark elves had a wide variety of skin tones, from tanned to charcoal black. Human artists had a thing for chocolate-colored skin for some reason, although it was a rarity in reality. This man was the Dark Elf ambassador to the Anfeng Empire. His face bore a sneer that Nathan suspected had settled on his face at some point in childhood, and was probably his resting expression. Narime sat behind her desk, slowly combing out a tail, while Sarif attempted to incinerate her with his eyes. Both of them looked up at Nathan when he entered.
"Ah, Bastion Nathan,"
Sarif greeted him, his expression instantly shifting to a bright smile.
"Or is it Lord Nathan now? I heard so many interesting things during my recent trip to a lake. It was a truly exciting trip for once."
To Nathan's surprise, the ambassador offered a handshake. The hunter stared at Sarif as if he had grown a second head. Nathan took the outstretched hand, and they exchanged a firm handshake.
"You visited His Majesty?"
"And Her Imperial Highness," Sarif stressed,
his expression tightening briefly.
"I had many duties to attend to. Hardly a surprise, given how busy the Empire is, and how strong the relationship between the spires and the Empire is right now. Today is proof of that."
They pulled away from each other, but Nathan gave Sarif a nod. He'd gotten the message. Sarif knew about Alice and her eventual move for the throne. Nathan needed to follow up on that in private later.
"His Majesty told me you'd visit when it was time."
"Is it?" Nathan asked.
"It is. We should leave as soon as possible. I would have sent word sooner, but..."
Sarif paused before letting out a cough.
"The One True Council of Aurelia has countless matters to attend to, given their role within the spires. but an opportunity has arisen, and they wish to extend you the unprecedented courtesy of observing the trial of former High Lord Tanius."
It took Nathan a moment to realize that "as soon as possible" meant now. Nadi May straightened up in her chair, her eyes widening. Nathan mentally checked on whether he had anything important that needed to be done.
"I am honored to receive the invitation, and of course I accept," he said politely, hiding his exasperation. "I'll bring Seraph, Narime, and Faye with me. I believe you're familiar with my champions, at least by reputation."
"They will make for excellent escorts. There are no issues with them," Serif said.
Nathan blinked, but managed to withhold his surprise.
"I see."
Then he recalled another promise of his with Kiana.
"I also have a champion in training with me. I can't leave her behind."
Sariv's lips thinned.
"That should be fine as well, although I do not know of her. I recommend that she remains with one of your respected champions at all times while within the spires."
Not even that had shaken Sariv. Nathan gave up on the political nonsense and simply smiled at Sariv while raising his arms in a shrug.
"Can you give 30 minutes to organize things over the wireless, Sariv? I run the military of an entire duchy and defend 5 portals. I can't exactly drop everything and walk off these days."
The ambassador chuckled.
"I'm certain that I can find something to amuse myself with while you prepare to leave. I noticed some unfamiliar bottles in one of the storerooms that I passed. If you don't mind..."
Narime clicked her tongue, but Nathan let Sariv poke around. The dark elves left. Once he was gone, Nathan quickly warded his office.
"He's talking about my sake, isn't he?"
Narime growled, her tails rising behind her.
"Probably. We'll give him a case as a gift," Nathan said.
The fox glared at him.
"He's an ally, Narime."
"To you?" the fox spat. "He asked if I was pregnant and whether I could defend the portal in my current state."
"I didn't say he wasn't an asshole," Nathan said. "And I guarantee you that the hunters were just as bad, even if they didn't say anything."
Narime scowled, but said nothing.
"What was that about the handshake?" Seraph asked. "I thought the hunter was about to die of shock."
"Dark elves see all other races as lesser. A handshake indicates that I am equal. Even as an ambassador, it's a huge faux pas for Sariv to shake hands with a human."
Nathan frowned.
"Or it's a sign that there's something big going on in the spires. He shouldn't have let me bring 3 champions. 4, if you include Kiana. It was a fight to bring 2 last time, plus Nerevia."
In his original world, when he had gone with Charlotte and Gareth, the council had limited their presence. Even in the face of the end of the world, they looked down on everyone else. Nerevia had been the only champion allowed near the council. Gareth hadn't even been allowed to bring a champion. Nathan had brought Vala and Narime, but that was it. Later visits hadn't been much better. What was going on in the spires?
"I suppose we'll find out once we get there," Seraph said.
Then she tilted her head to one side.
"Shouldn't I stay behind to run everything?"
"Anna and Kuda can do their jobs for once," he replied,
although Seraph glared at him in response.
"Get on the wireless and delegate your work, then. You're coming with me to the spires. I'm taking all of my duo gems, save fire, and both you and Narime are my smartest and sharpest champions."
"Ah,"
Narime smiled at him. Both women stepped up to him, and the fox's tails curled around him.
"You could have said that to begin with," Seraph said. "I'll never refuse a compliment. But who's smarter?"
"Shoo," he said, refusing her bait. "Go delegate your work. I need to talk to Faye, Kiana, and Anna."
He clicked his tongue.
"Shit. I'll also need to let Vera know that her bastion training will be delayed. and Sen needs to change her training, and—
We get it. You're busy.
Narime rolled her eyes and pushed him toward the wireless in the corner.
Go tell your distraught harem how much you'll miss them for the next few weeks.
I'll miss you, Narime, he said flatly. Her tail slapped him in the back of the head as he walked away. He considered annoying her more, but realized she might not use her tails next time. An hour passed while he spoke to everybody over the wireless. He realized that he could spend hours more handling everything, and ended up delegating a lot of affairs to Sen and Anna. Fire could protect Anna from any schemes while he was gone, although he hadn't found the opportunity to check on her mind again. Sen knew how to handle the portals. She still acted a little awkwardly around the night, but maybe being placed in overall command while everyone else was away would improve matters. At the very least, she hadn't complained when he put her in charge. Not about that, anyway. Her complaints about not getting any sex had been loud enough that half the castle probably heard her shouting over the wireless. Cheeky minx. Afterward, he joined his champions in a horseless carriage. Sarive had a carriage of his own, plus a mass of heavily armed and armored dark elf escorts. Like the rest of their military, these dark elf soldiers covered themselves from head to toe in heavy plate, and covered every inch of their skin in metal or cloth. Dark elves hated sunlight.
"Are you sure you'll be fine, sir?"
one of his beastkin knights asked him for the thousandth time. Her tail dropped behind her as she stared at him with wide eyes. "The spires aren't the place for knights or soldiers," he said. "I'm taking Captain Fay and my most powerful champions. You and the rest of the knights need to focus on supporting Sen and Sunstorm. Understand?"
"Yes, sir," she said sullenly.
The knight snapped off a noisy salute as he boarded the carriage and set off for the spires. Between the distance they needed to travel and the terrain, the trip took a few days. The spire sat on the opposite side of Forzel Valley, which split the northern and southern sections of the Garrick Mountains. The valley itself contained the Forzel River and countless tributaries to it. Fording such a massive river was dangerous, so they took a longer path to use a bridge. Faye spent most of the trip staring at the countryside. Kiana did her best not to appear excited to visit the spires, but eventually gave in and joined Faye with a wagging tail. Narime and Seraph alternated between verbally sparring with each other and questioning Nathan about whatever was on their minds. He made a mental note not to travel in the same carriage as the both of them ever again. He only imagined how obnoxious things might be if he was sleeping with Seraph. The two women were competitive to an obscene degree. Sleeping turned out to be difficult, not for physical reasons, but mental ones.
"You don't want to return to the spires," Narime said to him on the final day of the trip.
They were approaching the spires themselves. Yesterday, their shapes had been vaguely visible in the distance. Today, they saw the majesty of some of the oldest structures on Domar. The Aurelian spires predated the Yanfeng Empire. Dozens of sandstone towers reached for the heavens. Legends said that if Omria descended in the Pearlescent Canyon, then she ascended in the spires. The height of ordinary mage towers were a feeble imitation of the true power of Omria's chosen people. Or at least, that's what the fairies told everybody. They had built the spires long ago, supposedly, back when they were known as the First Peoples, rather than just fairies. Beneath the towers was the sprawl to end all sprawls. Domar contained many metropolises. Alaik was one of them. But the spires contained the entirety of the dark elf race inside these towers and the urban rat's nest beneath them. Even more dark elves lived in the mountains that the spires were built beside. Millions of people lived here. In Nathan's world, millions had died here.
"No, I don't want to come back here," he admitted, voice low. "My memories of this place are almost uniformly negative."
Faye dropped down from the window. Her nose looked slightly squashed after hours of pressing it against the glass.
She wagged her tail nervously while staring at him, and the other champions matched her expression. Kiana had stopped sightseeing some time ago, after the carriage jumped and she bumped her horn against the door.
Almost? Seraph asked.
There are a couple of bright memories, although most end up bittersweet. He sighed.
You never went into detail about how things got so bad in your timeline, Narime said. It's hard to imagine.
A pause.
Nathan, what happened?
A lot. I guess that goes without saying, he said. It was his turn to stare out the window, now that Faye's ass wasn't in the way. When the Federation collapsed, demons poured across the Halkeem Desert. At the same time, a succubus messenger invaded Arcadia. They were in the depths of civil war. All civilization east of the Garrick Mountains collapsed, just like that. He snapped his fingers for effect. Seraph and Narime closed their eyes. Unlike Faye or Kiana, they had lived through the destruction of their homeland. They knew firsthand the terrifying speed with which demons tore apart nations. Trefome dealt with the succubus. That meant Falmir needed to hold off the hordes of demons pouring across the former Federation. One of the largest defensive operations you can imagine, and the spires were in the middle of it. They didn't survive it, he said. Seconds passed in silence.
None of them? Out of this entire metropolis?
Narime asked in disbelief. A lot of Dark Elves fled, but the military and council didn't, he said. He shrugged. It's a bitter pill to swallow, now that I'm older and wiser. If the Dark Elves had pulled back en masse, they could have rebuilt. But without the defensive power of the spires, we probably couldn't have held back the demons. He fell silent again and simply glared out the window.
That's why you know Astra, Narime said flatly. She fought in the last stand.
Yes, she's the legendary Trigem champion of the spires. Her power allowed me to win, more or less.
And? The fox pushed.
He clenched a fist. I'm not a stupid young idiot anymore. I don't intend to be protected. I'll do the protecting.
That's better, Seraph said with a smile. It's fine for you to be haunted by your past. We understand that better than most. But what makes you so attractive is that you never stop moving forward.
Narime and Faye agreed. Their tails curled around him, and the temperature in the carriage rose several degrees. Their hands wandered across his legs. A cough interrupted them.
Perhaps you can wait, Seraph suggested, raising an eyebrow. Hush, it's not my fault you haven't done anything, Narime said, her hand firmly on Nathan's crotch.
Kiana glared at Narime while Seraph rolled her eyes. Someone might think the horse girl didn't agree with Narime's assessment.
No, I think I agree with Seraph, Nathan said to a pair of whines. We're close enough to the spires themselves that I don't want to explain this to anybody.
We won't take that long, Faye whined.
No, but you'll smell afterward. There's no shower in the carriage, he said.
They stared at him. A moment later, they pulled away from him.
Yes, I think you're right, Narime said. Let's wait until we settle into our rooms.
Yup, Faye chirped.
Seraph shook her head in amusement, while Kiana looked relieved. The carriage pulled into the city. A massive highway stretched over the nest of hovels in the sprawl. Countless carriages ran back and forth along it. Not a single Dark Elf could be seen out in the sun. But Nathan saw humans and beastkin. Smaller roads and highways split off from the causeway they were on. Handcarts and cheaper carriages that relied on manual labor rolled along these roads, and these needed drivers. Naturally, they weren't Dark Elves. Bulky collars hung around the neck of almost every human or beastkin visible. Just as the human nations enslaved beastkin, so did the non-human nations enslave humans. The Aurelian Spires was infamous for the fact that it allowed slavery of any race except dark elves. Arcadia only allowed human and beastkin slavery, and many humans lived outside of slavery anyway. Visiting the spires was a reminder that the world could be a very unfriendly place. Dark elves lurked beneath the shadows of the roads and buildings. Cloth canopies ran between rooftops and over storefronts to block out the sunlight. Most of the dark elves dressed very conservatively, often covering up their entire body. The exceptions stood out, with ostentatious piercings through their exposed body parts, and extravagant jewelry adorning their body. If a dark elf could wear something on a part of their body, they'd put a hole in it and try. That was how Nerevia had described it to him. She lacked piercings herself, due to her position. Public-facing dark elves such as champions and ambassadors weren't allowed piercings, as they knew that other races disliked them. But in the spires, piercings were a sign of prosperity and wealth. "Do they all have so many things through their ears and noses?" Faye asked. "Most will," Nathan said. "Don't bring them up."
"They usually like it when you do," Seraph said.
"It depends how you bring it up. They know that we don't like piercings. In Alaik, putting enough wealth to buy a castle into your actual head makes you look like a punk. Here, it's a sign that you're so rich that you can wear your wealth. It's a way to show off," Nathan said.
"I never thought of it like that," Narime said. "They're basically saying that they are so rich they can afford to never use it and show it off like that, right?"
"Yes. If a piercing vanishes, it's supposedly socially damaging. It means you likely sold off something, or were weak enough to be robbed."
He shrugged.
"I heard that piercings were important in Dark Elf culture, but this is more extreme than I imagined," Kiana said,
eyes wide as she pressed herself against Faye. The two struggled to stare out the window at the passing city. They pulled up outside the largest of the sandstone towers. This was the Jorman Spire, the central spire that housed the Council of Aurelia. Its exterior was surrounded by a steel and sandstone canopy that blocked out the sun. When they exited, they found themselves standing in a courtyard the size of Garrick Pass itself. Not a single civilian was in sight. A solid wall of armored, dark elf soldiers blocked off the entrances, including the one they had taken. A crowd formed past them, consisting mostly of humans and beastkin, who jumped and shouted as they tried to see what was happening. More guards crowded around Nathan, although they kept their distance. The dark elves eyed the gems of his champions cautiously. Faye said, eyes wide. Kiana clung to Nathan, pulling his cloak around herself with wide eyes. Despite her terror, Nathan gave her a push on the back. She needed to show strength here.
"Ignore them," Nathan said. "Follow me and Sarif."
Narime and Seraph gave him a sharp look, but said nothing. Sarif walked up with both hunters behind him. Nathan stepped up to him, and they fell into step as they walked toward the Jorman Spire's entrance. More soldiers stood out front. They stepped aside as Nathan approached.
"They're scared of us," Narime said.
One of the dark elf hunters looked at her and rolled her eyes, as if to say, "Duh." Sarif grimaced and nearly stumbled mid-step, but continued walking. To cover for himself, he began talking.
"It's been a long trip, so I'll see you to your rooms and let you settle in. Once the council is aware of your arrival, we can arrange for proceedings to begin. The Bastions will want to know you are here as well, so I'll be busy meeting with them shortly."
Nathan raised an eyebrow. Had the council expected him to take longer to arrive? Before he could ask, they reached the entrance. The doors didn't open automatically, and Sarif clicked his tongue. The guards watched nervously from nearby. Shouting reached them from the rowdy crowd beyond the lines of soldiers.
"What are the interior guards doing?"
one of the hunters muttered, speaking for the first time. She stepped forward and slammed her hands into the doors. They stood several times Nathan's height and were built from solid stone. They ground open, and the noise overwhelmed the crowd. Nathan winced at the noise. Faye, Kiana, and Narime covered their sensitive ears.
"What is she doing?" Sarif said when the doors opened, eyes widening.
Inside the lobby of the Jorman Spire stood Astra, her three opal gems shining from her collarbone. She smiled at Nathan.
"Nathan, good to see you," Astra said in her brusque manner of speaking.
Chapter 18. Astra wore a figure-hugging set of dark armor with a violet cape. It was more conservative than Nerevia's stripper outfit, but showed a lot more skin than the hunters and guards. Her luscious dark thighs peeked out between armored greaves and her breastplate, and she showed some hefty cleavage. White hair was tied in a short ponytail behind her head. And, of course, she had three gems set into her collarbone. Three iridescent opals. They were the same as in Nathan's world, which relieved him. Astra hadn't changed that much. She stood in the center of the tower's lobby. Every guard kept their distance from her, which made the lobby appear almost empty. A monogem champion quivered in the far corner. Nobody near Nathan moved. Sariv looked at his hunters, but they refused to even look at Astra. Nathan's own champions clustered near him, their bodies tense. Trigem champions were on an entirely different level from monogems and duogems. They were exceedingly rare, with only a small number active in the world at a time. The raw power within their bodies allowed them to match weaker champions without even using their gems. They possessed incredibly powerful gem enhancements and abilities, too. Nathan had seen the power of trigems firsthand. Astra's power allowed her to surpass the limits of mortality. Yphela had been granted the power to fight messengers one-on-one in his world. Narime gained the power to cast sixth-rank spells and lower almost instantaneously. Which is why Nathan took the first step forward and smiled at Astra.
"Your name's Astra, isn't it? Sariv didn't mention your title the last time we met. I'm amazed that you not only share the same name as the legendary Astra, but are also a Trigem champion," Nathan said, feeling as if butter wouldn't melt in his mouth. "It's such an amazing coincidence." Every eye turned to him, and most weren't friendly. Nathan felt that the hunters wanted to rip him limb from limb. Even the dark elf guards glared at him, despite their fear. Sariv stared at him in shock, his eyes attempting to escape his skull. He had made fun of their legendary champion. Maybe not the best idea. Astra raised a hand to cover her mouth, but he heard the muffled giggle. So did everybody else. The glaring stopped. After several moments, she regained her composure and said,
"You made fun of me. It's been so long. Centuries, at least."
She narrowed her eyes at him.
"Tell me, Nathan, where do you find your confidence?"
Sariv remembered that he was supposed to be in charge and interrupted.
"Grand Marshal Astra, I believe your duties require your attention elsewhere. Bastion Nathan has had a long journey, and I will lead him to his room now."
Astra shot Sariv a look, then ignored him. Although the ambassador fumed, he remained silent. Unlike last time, he wasn't in command of Astra, and she wasn't pretending to be a mere hunter. After clearing his throat, Nathan said,
"I'd be dead if I wasn't confident. Our enemies don't care about decorum."
"True."
Astra nodded, but her eyes remained narrow.
"Am I an enemy? Are you avoiding death now?"
"I don't know. Am I?" he replied, meeting her gaze.
Her green eyes pierced his. As always, there was something chilling about her eyes. He had always found her uncomfortable to be around.
Originally, he had thought that was because she simply looked down on others, like her brethren. His memories of Astra were that she valued power over all else. Now, he wasn't so sure.
"We should fight," Astra said suddenly.
The air split with the surprise of everyone around him. Nathan simply rubbed the bridge of his nose. Confused, Astra looked around herself.
"You mean that we should fight together, don't you?" he said. "You can speak properly. Why not use more words?"
She thinned her lips and gave him a haughty look.
"You understand me. Why use more words?"
Each of Nathan's champions glared at her. They didn't appreciate being told they didn't matter. For his part, Nathan found himself frustrated. He didn't understand Astra that well.
"Because you'll create misunderstandings, like you are right now," he said.
Then he sighed and bowed.
"Grand Marshal Astra, it is an honor to meet you, but I am terribly busy. Perhaps we can speak again later."
Astra glared at him, then at Sarif, who took a step backward.
"Fine," she ground out. "But we will fight. I want to see you shatter demons."
She turned and strode out of the lobby. Sanity returned shortly afterward. The guards pretended that Astra hadn't been here and that they hadn't abandoned their posts. Sarive's glare suggested that wouldn't fly, and the hunters pulled at their hair in embarrassment.
"Let's go," Sarif said, and led them away.
They walked to the elevators. Given the size of the spires, there were many of them. They came in all shapes and sizes. Sarif waved the champions into a larger one before stepping into a small one with Nathan. A door made from steel lattice closed, and the elevator began to rise in a series of loud thunks. Nathan hated the noise these contraptions made. They ran on some ancient combination of magical batteries and mechanical instruments that were built into the spires.
"How can you talk to her like that?" Sarif asked suddenly.
"Astra, you mean?"
"Who else?" he snapped,
then calmed down. He brushed down his suit and mumbled an apology.
"She can destroy us in an instant, but you talk down to her like she's just a woman."
Nathan decided not to correct Sarif's personality problems. He wasn't here to play psychologist or get involved with whatever issues the ambassador had with women.
"I spent a long time taking orders without questioning them, sometimes doing very stupid things and making dumb mistakes," Nathan said. "It never led anywhere, as you know."
Sarif nodded slowly.
"Your father's reputation precedes him."
Nathan let the misunderstanding linger, as he had intended to deceive Sarif into thinking of his false past. Blindly accepting the order of things due to power, nobility, or influence didn't help me, Nathan said.
"If I didn't stop letting people walk all over me, I wonder if I ever would have learned how to stand back up."
His life in his original world had led nowhere. When he had realized that Kadria was recruiting him, he had confronted that reality. At some point, he had stopped trying to make a difference and accepted the inevitable. Even at the end, when he had chosen death over trying to find another way out. He'd nearly repeated that mistake in this world when confronted by Vera. Breaking that cycle was hard.
"I didn't expect those words from you," Sarif said slowly. "Tell me something I haven't heard," Nathan chuckled.
Surprisingly, Sarif did as well. Then he nodded, slowly at first, then rapidly.
"Maybe you're right. I'll think on them."
The lift came to a stop. Sarif led him and the others to their rooms. Afterward, the ambassador left. He had to meet with the council and the dark elf bastions. The bedrooms were palatial. This time, Nathan had the room fit for a princess. The bed was large enough to contain an entire harem at once. As if to prove that point, all four women jumped on it.
"Nathan, can you make a bed like this back home?" Faye asked dreamily, as she sank into the covers.
I can see it being very useful, Narime said.
Her six silver tails fanned out across the bed without touching any of the others.
Very, very useful. The things we could do on this...
Kiana's face reddened as she watched Faye's and Narime's expressions turn from dreamy to lewd. The unicorn remained pure, but only physically. Her mind wandered far too much for Nathan to really call her pure of mind.
Can you wait 5 seconds before you fuck? Seraph said. The bed is very nice, though. Your room is obscenely huge. If you've been here before...
Nathan cut her off and cast wards on the room. She waited patiently for him to finish.
Why didn't you make a bedroom like this before? Huge bed to line everybody up at once. Lots of space to stretch out afterward. A bathroom the size of a house. Seems rather obvious to me, Seraph said.
That's a lot of wasted magical energy and effort. My bedroom is large enough, and I've already made the bed pretty damn large. Nathan frowned. He had increased its size twice this year. Once for Nutty May's tails, and a second time in anticipation of when Faye, Sunstorm, and Sen finally organized that foursome they chatted about from time to time. The topic moved away from Nathan's bed. They talked about the trip and other matters for some time. Food arrived, and the beastkin poked at the potted fish, blanched vegetables, and baked foods they received. Almost everything is preserved in the spires, Nathan explained.
I heard about that, Kiana said, eyes wide.
A book suggested it was because they worry about sieges or being cut off. Or maybe it's a cultural thing, given they used to be slaves under the fairies. Food would have been scarce for them, Narime said. A lot of popular food in Kurai was due to how hard it was to grow certain foods.
Whatever the reason for their selection of dishes, there wasn't enough food to feed 2 famished beastkin. Dark elves had brought the food, but they vanished afterward. Nathan knew his way around the spires, however. He tracked down the kitchen and badgered the human servants. They stared at him in amazement. It didn't take long to convince them to serve up more food now and to send much larger amounts in the future. Okay, maybe it did take a while. Nathan had to bring Faye over and demonstrate her ability to inhale entire plates of food. The night passed as Nathan expected it to. Faye and Narime took turns in his bedroom, as neither were that comfortable with each other yet. Pressing a buxom cat girl against his curvy, fluffy fox would take a little longer.
Shouldn't we have been called to do something? Where's Sarive?
Narime asked the next day, as they played chess. They had their own common room. Nobody bothered them, and the servants kept their distance. Nathan suspected the entire floor was empty, save for them. This was a room for guests and visitors, after all. How many could there be? All the rooms were bedrooms, meeting rooms, kitchens, and the like. The idea was that visitors stayed on the one floor unless escorted elsewhere. He visited around dawn, Nathan said. Mentioned that the council is currently considering another important matter.
Which is?
Narime raised an eyebrow. He didn't say. He's the ambassador, not our friend. Although he did appear to be frustrated by whatever it was.
That sounds bad.
Very, he said. He checkmated Narime, and she glared at him.
You should have brought your shogi pieces, he said with a shrug. I assumed we'd be busier than this, she said. You talk up how I'm your strategist, but it kind of hurts to lose to you so often.
It's only chess, he laughed. If being good at chess let you win wars and battles, the entire recruitment process for bastions would change.
Yet you keep winning.
How many days do you think I've wasted like this? He asked her. She remained silent. The answer is, a lot. Being buried in paperwork allows me to lose myself in my duty. The rest of the time, I play games, he explained.
Have you tried thinking less?
Narime proposed. You sound like Sen. The fox raised an eyebrow.
Maybe I'll spend more time around her then. Perhaps we can come up with some ways to get you out of your office more often.
The rest of the day passed in monotony. Overnight, a storm blew in. The spires didn't have windows. Instead, they had black steel railings and shutters along the outside. A fair bit of the rain got in. Their view outside turned into a solid gray wall of mist.
"How come the mist isn't coming inside?" Kiana asked him.
She stretched next to him and Faye. Physical training was important, as it helped Kiana acclimate to the energies from the Binding Stone. Fortunately, she favored an endurance enchantment, so training her was simple.
"The tower is warded," Nathan explained.
"Are we in the clouds?" Faye asked.
"Maybe," he shrugged. "I don't know. We're close to the mountains and high up. It's possible. It could just be the weather, though."
"I thought you knew everything," the cat girl whined.
"If I knew everything, things would be a lot different," he drawled.
Kiana giggled.
"Oh, how different? Would you be Emperor Nathan, with a harem of beastkin, worshipping every inch of your body?"
Faye broke down into giggles as well, and he ignored them. He felt that Faye was a bad influence on Kiana. On the other hand, she was much more open than she'd ever been in his world. He appreciated seeing her like this. She was adorable. When another day passed without anything happening, Nathan decided to investigate. Sarive didn't visit him on the third day. That boded poorly. Leaving this floor was dangerous, but Nathan had an excuse. Someone he could visit who would cover for him, so long as he made it to her room. The problem was ensuring she was there.
"You know Astra's schedule," Narime remarked. "That's creepy."
"Very creepy," Seraph agreed.
"If I asked you to write down my daily schedule, how accurate do you think it would be?" he asked them.
"Given you rarely leave your office except when we drag you out of it, that hardly counts," Seraph countered.
He shook his head.
"Astra is a creature of habit. So long as there isn't an invasion taking place, or anything else that needs her attention, she'll be in the same place every day. That's either her bedroom, one of the training grounds, or the bars. We'll be caught by guards before we get close to the last two, but her bedroom is on a floor that is lightly guarded during the day."
"Why?"
Seraph was incredulous.
"She's the only important person on the floor. Did you miss the part where everybody is intimidated by her?"
They made their way to the elevators. Nathan cast wards and gestured to Narime to do her part. Her tail shifted behind her in a complex pattern as she used magic to investigate the tower.
"Are you sure you shouldn't do this?" Narime said.
"I can't cast a ward and a spatial detection spell at the same time. I've been helping you with ascended magic for months now, for this reason," he said.
She said something unkind about him and his training, which he ignored.
Then her eye snapped wide open, and she gestured to Nathan wildly. He realized what she meant and began walking past the elevators. The others followed. A moment later, two dark elves rounded the corner. One of them was very familiar. Nathan met eyes with her. He growled, "Nerevia!" The duo gem champion froze before placing a hand against her hip and sticking out her tongue.
"Oh, it's little Nathan. What are you doing here? Did you give up on playing Bastion and decide to become somebody's pet? I heard Astra was looking for a new toy to break."
Snarls rose in response to her jab. Nathan stomped toward her. The dark elf man next to Nerevia backpedaled, raising his hands in surrender. He wore fine robes and a badge of office that indicated he worked for the Council of Aurelia. Everything about this stank of Tarbin's meddling.
"You shouldn't be here," Nathan said, looming over Nerevia. "You have no place here."
"I'm a dark elf. I belong here a lot more than your pasty ass," Nerevia spat.
"Don't lie."
I don't know what favor you called in or from who, but the spires don't welcome you, he said. What bullshit are you up to for Tarbin?
The other dark elf panicked, his eyes widening and pupils shrinking. He looked around for help, but found none. This floor was devoid of guards.
This is cute, but we both know you're not going to do shit.
Nerevia sneered at him.
Walk away, little boy. You aren't your daddy.
His hand snapped out and grabbed her arm. She gasped.
I don't care about Tarbin, but you and your friend are up to something that I'm pretty sure is treason, Nathan said.
Nerevia's amethysts flashed. Instantly, he jumped backward. The dark elf fled. Seraph and Faye stepped between him and Nerevia, their own gems flashing. Flames appeared over Faye's arms.
Enough! Nathan boomed.
He injected magic into his voice. The non-humans covered their ears, including Nerevia.
Fuck, she swore. I think I just found another thing I'm not into. Ears and oral pain are not my fetish.
I don't care, Nathan said. He ran a hand through his hair. Fucking hell, Nerevia. The fuck are you doing here? Astra let you in, and you're fucking with the alliance between the spires and the Empire? She'll rip you limb from limb when she finds out.
The dark elf champion froze, her purple eyes shrinking to pinpricks. After a few moments, she started breathing again.
I know you're fishing, but damn, she said. You're better at this than I expected. Still, you're not getting anything out of me like this. Like I said, you're not going to touch me. I put those scars on your body, little Nathan. That's what power is.
He stared at her for several moments before it clicked. Anger simmered within him, but he ignored it. The Nathan Straub from this world had been tormented by Nerevia, but he was much, much stronger than her.
Narime, you've mapped the spires. How many minutes do you think we have before guards arrive? He asked, turning to face the fox.
She stared at him in confusion. Then comprehension crossed her face, and she smirked.
Oh, more than enough time to break a pouty little dark elf in.
Well then, Nathan clicked his fingers. Why don't you start, Faye? Or maybe you want to, Seraph. I'll leave it to you.
Vicious grins crossed the faces of his champions. Although this was an act intended to intimidate Nerevia, he doubted all of their hatred toward Nerevia was feigned. She was a bitch, after all. But Nathan knew that she acted this way so that people hurt her, because she got off on it. Nerevia's eyes widened. When Faye's arm lit up with fire, the dark elf stared at the bright blue flames, transfixed.
Oh, Nerevia said.
Unfortunately, or perhaps fortunately, a newcomer interrupted them. They heard footsteps, and Faye banished her flame. Astra rounded the corner swiftly. Her eyes narrowed at the scene.
Before anybody said anything, Nathan seized the initiative. Astra, can I ask you for a favor? He said, deciding to gamble on a hunch.
Nerevia and Astra went back a long way, but he knew they were estranged for some reason.
Of course,
Astra purred, her eyes boring into Nerevia. The younger dark elf champion shrunk in on herself. Neither Nathan nor Nerevia had ever heard Astra sound like that before.
Can you punch Nerevia for me? He asked.
A sickening crack filled the hallway. Nerevia collapsed to the ground, blood streaming from her nose. She groaned loudly, but didn't try to get up.
Anything else?
Astra asked, staring down at her supposed friend with an odd look in her eyes. Nathan gulped.
Did you want to make a time to talk? The council appears to be busy right now.
Now it was time for his body to be torn apart by Astra's gaze.
After several long seconds, she nodded.
It is important. Tonight, do not bring them.
Astra gestured at his champions with her head. Then she thought of something else.
Bring alcohol.
With those words, the legendary Trigem champion swept away, leaving Nerevia bleeding on the ground.
I think it's time for an interrogation, Nathan said. Maybe we'll find out why the council isn't talking to us.
Nerevia tried to muster up a glare, but it looked more like she wanted him to fuck her. Nathan wasn't sure if that was a good thing or not. For now, he asked Faye to carry the dark elf back to his room. Narime, Seraph, and Kiana followed quietly, although he didn't miss the fact that Kiana was oddly quiet. Chapter 19.
You suck at healing, Nerevia spat at Narime.
The fox ignored the jab and continued holding her glowing hands against Nerevia's jaw.
Do you want me to stop? Stop being shit, maybe.
The dark elf winced when Narime pulled away, and a curse escaped her lips.
Is this the magical equivalent of a band-aid?
For you, Narime said. It's like a regeneration spell. The regeneration and enhancements of your gems interfere with it.
Something clicked in Nathan's mind. You're using a form of life magic. Narime gave him an odd look.
Not quite. Altering life itself is impossible for mystic foxes. I've heard it described as taboo, but I don't know why. But yes, my healing is a form of ascended magic, rather than one of the natural elements of magic.
Taboo, huh? Nathan remembered Seraph's reaction when he had casually mentioned learning mental magic. Many disciplines of ascended magic might not be welcomed by others. Although Nathan wasn't learning how to control minds, the possibility would scare others. And he had been experimenting with life magic in order to create food. But if Narime's race considered it taboo, there was probably a reason. He made a note to be more careful when bringing up his ascended magic research.
This is some amazing conversation, but does nothing for putting my shattered jaw back together,
Nerevia whined. Her purple eyes glared at Nathan, who stared blandly back. All of them sat inside his palatial bedroom. Nerevia was bound with silk cord that Nathan had found in one of the cabinets, alongside a number of other bedroom instruments. Faye's face had lit up when she saw the many colorful objects, but she was forbidden from playing with them. Without Nathan, anyway. Kiana sat in the corner while Seraph leaned on the wall next to her. Faye leaned against Nathan on the bed, her hands wandering until he batted them away. Nerevia's eyes spotted the constant attempts to play with Nathan as she sat on the floor.
I could tell that Astra holds you in high regard, Nathan drawled, his head in one palm.
Goddess, you still think we know each other? You're so full of shit.
Nerevia grinned.
You couldn't even touch me yourself.
Uh-huh. You realize nobody is coming for you, right? Nathan said flatly.
She blinked in confusion.
Your friend ran away, but no guards came. Astra arrived too quickly. She probably detected your gems activating.
Or she had felt Narime's or Nathan's magic, despite his attempts to hide it. That possibility greatly concerned him.
In the end, you're in my bedroom, surrounded by my champions, on a floor completely devoid of dark elf guards, while inside a country that would slap a slave collar on you if it didn't make them look weak.
Nathan's gaze pierced Nerevia, and she shuffled uncomfortably, unable to look him cleanly in the eye.
Tell me what you're doing here, Nerevia, before I go tell Astra that you've disappointed her even more.
How the fuck do you even know anything about that? Nerevia shouted. How do you know about me? About Astra?
Why does she and everybody else think you're such hot shit? What in the name of the goddess happened to you after Tarban kicked you out?
Narime stood up and took a seat. The rest of his champions watched quietly, although their gazes fell on Nathan. He sighed.
That doesn't matter to you right now, he said. I have a duty to the Empire to carry out, and you're getting in my way. Tell me what you're doing here.
Nerevia gulped as she finally looked him in the eye. Faye's hands wandered across his crotch, and he didn't push her away this time.
Is the fox using some sort of spatial spell to make your balls fit in your pants?
The dark elf asked.
Because I don't know how you fit balls the size of your head in them.
Do you have a thing for massive balls? He asked dryly.
No, but I do have a thing for men with massive balls.
She grinned at him.
I guess we know where Tarban's brain ended up,
Narime said, and Seraph smirked in response. Nerevia ignored them.
When Tarban kicked you out, you were an angry little boy, desperate for revenge. I figured you'd become something fun to play with, especially after you joined the academy. This is different. You have more steel and fire in you than I ever thought possible. For somebody who was so soft, you became such a hard ass. You even have women drooling over your cock while you interrogate me. Do you know who you remind me of?
Faye stuck her tongue out at Nerevia, but she did stop trying to free Nathan's dick from his pants.
Not this again, Nathan said. Seraph says that I'm Tanius. The Emperor wants me to be Leopold.
Kiana's eyes widened at his words, but he kept talking.
You think I'm Tarban. What's next? Princess Charlotte shows up and says I'm her father?
You carry your age well, if that's the case, Seraph said. Unlike this old witch.
She jabbed a thumb toward Narime, who slapped her hand down in response.
Oh, no. You're not your daddy, Nerevia purred.
Nathan raised an eyebrow.
Tarban's all heat and bluster. An angry man who needs to constantly remind people of how great he is, because he's terrified that others will forget if he doesn't slap his dick in their face all the time,
Nerevia sneered.
Yet he's the man who holds your leash, Nathan said, and who you let hold your leash.
She glared at him.
Again, how do you know this?
He didn't answer.
Huffing, Nerevia countered, he was my choice. The spires are full of men, but they're all terrified of champions. The bastions are all male, so the champions are female. And the bastions have so many of us that they pick and choose which they care about. It's so stifling here. The men fear me, the bastions ignore me, the women sneer at me, and the nobles see me as a pawn.
Nathan nodded. Astra's bastion, I forget his name, has over 30 champions, doesn't he?
I don't know. I left.
Nerevia shrugged.
But he had 40 before I did. Maybe some died in the cascade. But while I was under him, there was nobody interesting. So I left and found Tarban, a man who hated everything that I represented. He was everything I wanted when I was young and dumb.
You say that like you're still not young and dumb, Narime said. If you were smarter, you would have left him long ago.
Nathan stepped in before the women started arguing again.
So who do I remind you of, if not Tarban?
The Council.
He blinked. Then he ran his hands over his head, making a show of checking for piercings.
None of you pierced my eyes while I slept. I'm not going to step into the shower and find a ring through my balls, right?
Giggles ran through the room.
Funny, Nerevia said. But tell me, if it benefited you,
Would you throw me off this tower and let me plummet to my death? If I don't tell you anything, will you have your little cat turn me into ash, and then convince Astra not to say anything?
Nathan's breath caught at her words. They hit harder than he liked.
I thought so, she said, grinning. That's the difference. Tarban is all bark. You are all bite. If I get in your way, you will destroy me. You killed Fias and his champions in a single fight. The other bastions and champions in the Empire are terrified of you. If they get in your way, will you show up with a kill squad of champions and take their binding stone off them? Will you brutally crush all of Princess Alice's opponents?
Nathan clenched his fists. Nathan wouldn't, Kiana tried to say, standing up. Seraph placed a hand on her shoulder. Kiana froze and looked around in confusion. While Faye looked as confused as Kiana, Narime's expression was grim.
Narime, Faye, keep an eye on her, Nathan said, standing up.
He walked out of the room with Seraph.